Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jacob Rudner, a special emergency edition. We really are breaking out the flashing sirens, the horns. This is a big deal. We are here recording this on Saturday afternoon because the news broke this afternoon. We've written about it. We've talked about it before, but it does seem like now that we are headed towards an announcement that the San Francisco Giants are hiring Tennessee head coach Tony Vitello to become their manager. He's going to go from being a coach to a manager because we haven't seen this before, but we're talking about you're going from college baseball to the big leagues, straight one jump, one leap. And we wanted to talk about that. So Jacob, you've obviously been following this, you know, for several weeks now, or at least a week and a half, I guess, is when the first word broke on this. How shocked are you? How surprised are you? But and more importantly, what is your initial thoughts hearing that this is, again, we're not saying it's not finalized yet, but likely to be finalized?
You know, I would say that on the shocked scale, I'm way up there right now. This is a very surprising development. And this, I go back about 2 weeks and just think, you know, the conversation at the time when the news broke in The Athletic that Tony Vitello was, and I quote, a long shot candidate, that it was exactly that. He was a long shot candidate. The Giants were doing their due diligence. They wanted to cast a wide net. There was a lot of talk behind the scenes that a potential Bruce Bochy reunion was going to be something that could be considered. And Tony Vitello, to me at the time, based on the conversations I had with people who are around Tony, with people who are around the Giants, was that including his name was realistic, but very far-fetched in terms of its likelihood to develop into the actual hire that the Giants were going to make. So on that sense, I am stunned to see that this is where we're at. That being said, my initial reaction to this is that I think it is the optimal move if you are the San Francisco Giants. Why not try something new? Obviously, this is unconventional. We are yet to see in really the history of baseball, coaches jump from the Division I level to the major league level and do so with great success. Pat Murphy is obviously an example of somebody who has done really well after coaching in college, but that wasn't a, you are a college coach and now a big league manager transition. This is not that. But I do think, and you and I have specifically talked about this, with the rate that players are getting drafted and then called up within their first 2 years, the player development timeline, specifically for the college player, is shorter than it's ever been. So if you're the Giants, why not bring in somebody like Tony Vitello, who has become a master of transfer portal recruiting? He is an elite identifier of talent at the college level. And if you know that you want to be bringing in college age talent in the draft and accelerating those guys to the big leagues as fast as you possibly can, why not bring in somebody who is as equipped as anybody to be able to manage young talent and win with it and identify that talent in the first place? So to me, is this unconventional? Is there risk to this? Absolutely. But does it make a lot of sense to me? I really do think it does.
I'm fascinated by it, but kind of going along what you're saying. Okay, so let's look at this. We're going to start by looking at this from the Giants' perspective and the hire for the Giants. We promise you, if you're a Tennessee fan and you want to hear about what Tennessee's implications are, we're going to get there. But starting on the major league side here, starting on the Giants side, if this doesn't work, the likelihood of why it doesn't work is, okay, the enormity of jumping, even if you are a coach who can absolutely relate to players, who's absolutely personable, can make those connections, all these things, 100% true here. But you know, we could be reading a story, we could be reporting a story in a few years, but where it's like, well, really what happened is that once it turns sour, there was that disconnect of you're a college coach, this is the big leagues, the kind of thing that, let's just be honest, is always going to be there. But at the same time, if it goes well, quickly becomes immaterial, right? Like this is one of those things where I don't think it's as much. I think it's kind of like a factor that if things go poorly becomes magnified. And if things go well, becomes inconsequential very quickly, right? Like we have seen managers from all different backgrounds lot of minor league experience, a lot of managerial experience, and have success. We've had seen the exact same thing fail miserably. We've seen players like Stephen Vogt was a player like an hour and a half ago, and he's a successful manager. Where you can say he didn't really have a long tenure. He was a catcher, a lot to that, but he didn't have a long tenure of apprenticeship to learn how to do this. He jumped almost right into it. We've seen that. We've seen literally ex-players hired who have no coaching or managerial experience, basically. And it, again, that can work. It cannot. And if it works, then it's like, that didn't matter. And if it doesn't work, then it's like, see, he didn't have the experience or whatever. So it's kind of like, if this works, it's going to be the sign that college coaches can work as major league managers straight to the jump. And if it doesn't, it'll be used as an example that it can't. But I do think in reality, much more that's going to be about the talent that the Giants have, the talent that they develop with Tony V. And it also has a much more to do with Tony Vitello than it does with, can college coaches jump straight to the major leagues? If he works, it doesn't mean that this is something that can work every time. And if it fails, it doesn't mean that no one else could do it. It just means that it didn't work here. But okay, so now you know Tony well. I'll ask it this way. If this works, why will it work? You talked about the one aspect of it, but now let's talk about it also from the standpoint of the responsibilities of a major league manager and kind of Vitello's experience running and succeeding at the absolute top level as a college coach.
To me, it's twofold. The first is that we know that the major league managerial job right now is different than what it used to be. There is a lot more input from people who are not necessarily in the dugout. You need to be able to comprehend and utilize analytics and the math of baseball a lot better than you probably had to even a decade ago. And we do know that Tony Vitello and this Tennessee staff has done that. They manage their team in the most modern way possible. They're a very heavily invested program in the analytics and the data. They utilize that to their advantage, so they are not archaic whatsoever. I think that that's important, first and foremost, in any hire that any major league team is making, especially if you're going to go get somebody who is 100% inexperienced at the professional level. That being said, there is an unquantifiable measure here that I think is very important to this hire, and that is that Tony Vitello has demonstrated over time the ability to relate to and improve young talent. He knows how to connect with the 21 to 24-year-old demographic that a lot of these young rebuilding major league teams are going to be founded on. And so if you are the Giants, you're bringing in somebody who is an expert in relating to what we'll call the modern baseball player. And so if you are, again, going to be accelerating talent as quickly as we're seeing to the major league level, and you're the Giants, and you're trying to try something new, and you're bringing in college draft eligible players, I think that Tony Vitello is a really good bet to be able to get those guys into a winning condition quickly. And that starts upstairs in the head. And I think that he does a really great job at influencing that exactly.
Okay, but let me also ask it this way. So we said the manager job at the big league level is actually much more focused, much less expansive than the job that he has had, right? Like that's where, if you say, we'll kind of get into a little bit of the dynamics of this from, you know, from his perspective as well. I actually think in many ways you could argue that you could argue it's a more difficult job in some ways from the standpoint of you're the major leagues, you know, even I don't care what SEC program you're at. It's not the same thing as you're a major league manager. But I would also say kind of what you talked about, you have much less control as a major league manager than you do as the head coach of a top-notch Division I program, because at Tennessee, he is, doesn't matter if they have a, you know, whether someone has a title of director of baseball ops, general manager, whatever. Tony's the GM. Vitello is the person who, to use the Bill Parcells, you know, analogy, he buys the groceries and then he makes the meal, right? There is no player at Tennessee who Tony Vitello has not evaluated, has not been part of, yes, we want to bring him on board. And then when they are there, he is the final decision maker on every significant decision that goes on, whether that's, are we going to pull the pitcher? Whether we are we going to swing away in this situation? You know, all these things that now some of those decisions may be made by people under him, but they're all flowing through him. We know that a major league manager now is probably has the least power that major league managers, not probably, I don't think there's any real debate. They have much less power than they've ever had at any point in the history of major league managers, because it really did used to be. There was a time when the GM did exist, but really on the flow chart, they kind of existed at best in a co-equal existence. The president, you know, there was no such thing as a president of baseball operations at that point, but the GM, if you go back to the Casey Stengel and before days, there were people who were in charge of bringing in the players. Absolutely. In some cases, the manager was kind of the most key decision maker on that as well. But we are talking about, like, if you go back to the 30s, you didn't have farm systems, right? Like the decision on, hey, are we going to purchase this player from this minor league team, often ran through the manager. When it came to the lineup, that was the manager's decision and no one else's. And whatever decision a manager made in the game, he might have to defend it post game in the media scrum or whatever, but that was the end of it. There wasn't someone then who would pull him aside and say, you know, you left the starter in for an extra inning there, and that probably cost us the game tonight. Let's talk that through. And again, even now, even by all accounts we have, even in the most collaborative processes between front offices and managers, there's really no such thing as the autocratic MLB manager now who has complete authority and fills out Earl Weaver style, fills out their lineup, and this is my lineup, and if you don't like it, you know, tough. No, this is all something where the manager is the public face and the final, you know, in some cases, the final decision maker, but in a process that is much more collaborative than it's ever been. How much of a challenge do you think that's going to be? Because again, now this is the Giants are not, you know, we're not going to say that this is Buster Posey is a different president of baseball operations than the average MLB front office at this point. The fact that he would hire Tony Vitello kind of shows that he's looking to do things somewhat differently. But even with that, there's no question that this is going to be now for him much more that he is part of a massive team rather than he is the head of an organization. What do you think the challenges and the opportunities are there?
You know, first and foremost, I think it's going to be great for Tony, because I do believe that anytime you take responsibilities off somebody's plate, it allows them to flourish in the areas where they were previously strong. He doesn't need to worry about his team's NIL funds anymore. There are people who are going to do that. You don't need to worry about how much you're paying a free agent like you do in the transfer portal right now. That's a big deal. Tony will have an opportunity, if he becomes the Giants manager, to focus on maximizing the team he has to win games. And I would assume being a significant part, because he would be an asset, in my opinion, in the draft prep process. He knows college baseball as well as anybody. But the list of responsibilities beyond those things that I just said, and as you pointed out, isn't very long. He does have a chance here to just go purely try to win baseball games. And I've had conversations with coaches in college baseball that are not candidates to go and jump up to the major league level. And they have said repeatedly, you know, I consider all the time, is now the time for me to go and let this mid-major job that I have go by the wayside to maybe go take a high major assistant coach job because the responsibilities that are put on college coaches this day and age with NIL and the stressors of the NCAA and how that's been deteriorating over time and roster restrictions, none of those are things that Tony Vitello will have to deal with. So if you are him and you have an opportunity to go and manage a big league team and try and go and win a World Series and focus on all of the things that are required to be able to go do that, I kind of like your chances. It's a bet worth taking on yourself because he is a good baseball manager. He knows how to go win games. And to your point, that's kind of the main focus now. He doesn't have a lot of the headaches that are associated with college coaching. I think it brings the best out of him.
Obviously, we've always talked, there's years, you know, recruiting is a key component. Obviously, now transfer portal is a key component. But those are, you could really say, those are baseball aspects of the job. I think part of what you're hearing, what you're talking about here, is if you're a college coach, especially, again, but even you're at Tennessee, wherever you are, but especially at a mid-major, you're also a fundraiser, right? The thing that you don't have to do now, if you're Tony Vitello, is if you're the Giants manager, there's never a day you wake up and say, like, hey, for us to do what we want to do, you really have to line up some, you know, some key donors to help fund what we need to do. You don't have to like say, like, we're with you on this, but, you know, we've got to get the money to do it. That becomes now an entire division of the organization whose job it is to bring in the revenue, maximize revenue, all that. That, again, all flows through the coach at a college program in a lot of ways.
And let me bring this up too. How nice is it going to be if you're Tony Vitello and at the end of the year, you don't need to worry about whether or not you have two things. One, the funds to bring back your best player. Is the NIL package strong enough to retain my most productive player? You don't have to worry about Logan Webb going and pursuing a better NIL deal because Logan Webb is under contract. And that contract was not something you had to negotiate. So the not only does he have to no longer be an NIL generator, he doesn't need to be an NIL distributor. And I think that that is a massive factor in all of this. He can truly spend time on developing the players who he has in-house, making sure that they get better year over year. And he's ensured that that is a multi-year process, which no longer exists in college sports. If you're a college head coach right now and you bring in an ultra talented freshman, there is no guarantee that he's going to be your ultra talented sophomore a year later. Tony now would be stepping into a situation where your rookie is your sophomore player the next year, lest your organization decides to trade them. So that's a pretty enviable situation if you are a supremely talented player developer and somebody who does a great job of developing relationships with these players. Tony checks both of those boxes to me. This is a much easier setup to make players better, especially when they're younger. Getting the right people in the door quick is critical to maintain your company's workflow. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed Sponsored Jobs helps you stand out and hire fast. With Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast because it puts the best and most qualified candidates in front of you quickly. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
That also strikes me, like if you said, like on his end, I know that there are some listeners, viewers of this who go, is this a decision like the major leagues versus college? And I actually think, like, I do think one could craft the case that there are college coaches for whom it would be a bad idea from the standpoint of like, you, we could go back to your shop. You shop for the groceries, you make the meal, right? Like you cook it, like you get, you are going from, I have complete control to I am a part of a much larger organization where I have less control. That being said, the other key thing here is we're not saying, I would always tell you, like, I think that coaches as a general rule are extremely competitive. I don't think anyone who's ever seen Tony Vitello would say, oh, you know, that the fire of competition doesn't burn deeply in there. It burns deeply there. But I would also say, to me, I want your thought on this. This is also kind of, maybe not, we'll get to Tennessee. Maybe not the perfect time for Tennessee, but for him, kind of the perfect time. And what I mean by that is if you're going to make this move, he's already done it. You can try to add additional national titles. But if you grew up and your dream was one day I'm going to win it all in Omaha, my team's going to dogpile, we're going to hoist the trophy. The second one's great. The third one's great. You want to, if you want to be like, hey, we're the best program of all time, all those things can be true. But you've already checked the box on the one that's like, if I don't get that, it might always burn at me. So he's got that. But the other part is this. I think for the Giants, this is something that is a high risk, high reward, right? Like the risk is, sure, if it goes poorly, if you hired, take your pick of former catcher, and you hire former catcher, big league catcher as manager, and it doesn't work out, you just roll on to the next. This is a much bigger swing. If it works, you get all the plaudits. If it doesn't, it's like, see, they thought they could do something differently than everyone else, and look how stupid they were, or whatever, right? But from Tony's perspective, I view this as, if this works, he's now a one of one, right? He is the one who has basically opened the door in a way, like you said. Pat Murphy's different. Pat Murphy, the gap between Pat Murphy, college head coach, and Pat Murphy, major league manager, was a chasm, right? He basically had enough resume in pro ball post-college coaching to where it was not an illogical hire by that point. In Tony's case, if this works, then he is the one of one. He's the college coach who jumped straight to the majors. And by the way, just from a standpoint, if they win a World Series in San Francisco, you become like, wow, no one else has ever done this. I mean, this, you don't see someone win Omaha and a World Series. So that's all, you know, that's all ahead of him as a possibility. But if it fails, if this is a dumpster fire of all dumpster fires, and I don't think either of us expect that this will be the case, but if this never works in any way, shape, or form, I feel comfortable promising this. They could be the 2025 Rockies in San Francisco, and that will not be the case. But even if they did, the minute that he became available again, he would be the number one, the top coaching candidate for any appealing college baseball job in the country, basically, unless there's a school where it's like, we remember Tony, like we're such rivals. I don't think if the Vandy job came open down the road, you know, that, like, just to make the point, like that would not be one where they're like, oh, we're going to bring, you know, that there's rivals now. But I'm saying those is like, nothing that happens in Major League Baseball is going to affect the fact that Tony Vitello is viewed as one of the best college baseball coaches in the country. And if he ever became available again and he wanted to go back to college baseball, it would not be something where he would have to start two steps back or anything like that. It would just literally be like, I'm back and I can pick a top program. I don't need to try to rehabilitate my name, anything like that. That will always be there if he wants to come back to it. This opportunity will only come around once, maybe twice, but probably only once. You only have this one chance to take the run to Major League Baseball.
That's 100% accurate. And I would go as far as to say that whatever the top job is in college baseball, at whatever point there needs to be some sort of separation, if ever, between Tony Vitello and the San Francisco Giants, he immediately becomes candidate number one for everything. He is the most attractive hire available in college sports. You know he can win. You know he can recruit. You know he's perfectly built for the NIL era. Those are things that are going to... Yeah, go ahead.
Number two, I would argue. I would say Jay Johnson would be number one if Jay Johnson was ever available right now.
Well, unless Jay Johnson goes to the pros, Jay Johnson will be LSU's coach forever.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying, I don't want anyone... I don't want anyone hearing this to be like...
Sure.
Jay Johnson is the, like, as great as Tony's been, Jay Johnson is the most successful coach in college baseball right now.
Jay Johnson, there's an argument to be made that Jay Johnson is one of the best college baseball coaches ever. And we've written about that at Baseball
America. Right. We're not ignoring it either.
My point is, I'm not ignoring it necessarily, but I guess I would say this. I'm also not giving it much credence because I know that unless Jay Johnson follows the Tony Vitello track, which, by the way, that's a whole other separate conversation. Let's say this does work great. Does this become an option for Dave Van Horn and Jay Johnson and Kevin O'Sullivan and some of these guys who have made a lengthy career out of college baseball and have done a lot of winning? Are they able to go and be major league managers? Tony Vitello, I think, will be kind of the gateway into understanding whether or not that's a possibility for more guys moving forward. But I don't think that Jay Johnson is a candidate anywhere but LSU so long as he is in the college ranks. That being said, Tony Vitello becomes number one if he needs to come back to college. Number one, easy, unquestioned. What also happens in this, and I think it's important, is kind of what I touched on a second ago. Do we see Tony succeed in professional baseball? And does this start to become a lot more viable? Is Jay Johnson a candidate for the next big Major League Baseball managerial opening? Because some of these teams know this guy does an amazing job of identifying talent. He's able to do so with guys who are considered quote unquote underrated in the transfer portal process. He brings the best out of them. They go win national championships. Why not try him out at the major league level? I think Tony is now in a position to kind of provide that pathway for other college coaches. So on one hand, to your point, 100%, this is a safe move. You either go into San Francisco and you are wildly successful and you keep that job for a long time. I think there's an in-between where you're moderately successful and you hang around Major League Baseball for an extended period. And then the third option is, for whatever reason, you leave San Francisco, or if it's another step down the line, and then you can revert back to college pretty much at will, because there won't be a school that won't want to hire you. So for Tony, it's wins all around. And I do think that it's worth mentioning that for other college baseball coaches, some of these other very high profile guys, this is also a potential win as well.
Oh, and if this succeeds, it opens kind of a wide array. Like, because then you also have, there are the coaches who've kind of done the dual. Like, I mean, again, just to bring out, like, Wes Johnson was a big league pitching coach who then became a college pitching coach who's now a college head coach. There's players, you know, there's coaches who've had kind of that path. There's a wide array of college coaches with different kinds of experience that kind of becomes much more interesting. This works. Now, I do want to say, like, this would be absolutely unprecedented for college and baseball and Major League Baseball. What it's not, we have seen this in other sports, right? Like, this is
for sure.
Now, and that's where maybe there is at least a reason for some caution here, is that, like, look, I'm not a basketball fan. You follow basketball. You've covered basketball much more recently than I have. We have seen college basketball coaches make the jump to the NBA. It's not regular, but it has happened. We have seen it in the NFL, I would say, relatively regularly over the years. And it's not that it's never worked, but in the NFL, it has very rarely worked, I would say. I would say the hit rate is very small. For every, and again, the tricky part of this is there's different kinds of it too, right? Yes, you could say that Pete Carroll was a college coach who went to the NFL, but Pete Carroll was a college coach who then was an NFL assistant coach, who then was a failed NFL coach, and then he kind of went back and forth between college and the NFL, but he had NFL experience. You have a variety of coaches who have jumped straight from college football to the NFL and think that it's going to go great, and then it really doesn't. Steve Spurrier was never the NFL coach that he was in college. Lou Holtz was never the NFL coach he was in college. Those are two very widespread of the years, but there's a lot of examples of this. So there is like something in the NFL where we've seen like it is a challenge to make that jump. But again, as you said, this could pave the way. This could be the one that's like, okay, now this becomes a real possibility. And also the other thing I would say about it is take this a minor, like it does feel like in the 2020s, more so than ever before, like you can think of coaching staffs at the major league level as like, okay, this is going to be an analogy right from my, I apologize to everyone, but you know, there was the heat shields on like the Apollo rockets as they came back through the atmosphere. And the design of it is that it shed, you burned off and shed as it went down to keep everyone inside cool. The coaching staffs at major league levels in a lot of ways are the heat shield for front offices nowadays, in that if you have a bad season, it's the hitting coach's time to be let go, whether the hitting coach is doing a great job or not, or the pitching coach, or the bullpen coach, or the bench coach, where it's like, see, we recognize that this went poorly. We're making a change in direction. And then if that doesn't do enough, then it's the manager's job to be fired to, again, demonstrate, see, we recognize that this season did not go as we want. Moving on, we will go in a different direction. When in reality, there's less change in direction now bringing in a new manager than there was 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. I would say, though, this also has a chance to kind of maybe, I want to say change that dynamic, but kind of like, again, if Tony Vitello succeeds in San Francisco, it could kind of shift the focus on managers at the big league level a little bit, because his story is going to be so interesting. Following up on the heels of Pat Murphy, who's been such an interesting story in development. Like, again, like they'll be interesting to see, but okay, we promised we were going to do this. So I do want to flip it to the other side of this, which is, well, you said this is a win probably in every way for Tony Vitello. Again, we're acknowledging you have reporting, you've kind of independently talked to sources that, not that this is finalized, but that this seems to be headed in that direction,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So obviously Tennessee right now has to be starting to say, okay, what do we do now? Because this is a lose-lose for Tennessee. That is nothing against, as I see it at least, that's nothing against the rest of the staff there, the talent they have there, the administration, anything like that. But there's never a good time to lose, as you just laid out, one of the best coaches in college baseball. And I would say, though, that if it's going to happen, this would be one of the more challenging times to do so. Like, okay, I'll phrase it this way. Is there any logical case to be made for anything other than promoting from within?
Not right now. Not right now. And you know, for those of you who are listening to this podcast and you're wondering, all right, when is the Tennessee baseball head coaching hot board going to hit the website at Baseball America? I don't know that you're going to see one in this instance, because the reality is this is a really difficult time to have to bring in a new head coach. And part of that is because there's just not a lot of teams who have available head coaches at this stage. A lot of guys have their 2026 squads built out. The guys who might be willing to jump ship on their teams at this point, I don't know that those are the most optimal candidates for a Tennessee. And the third and most important aspect of all of this is this: if you're Tennessee, you do need to now work to do a ton of movement on keeping your roster together, because all of its players will now have an opportunity, a special transfer portal window, to enter the portal for 30 days. You have to prevent that in order to have any semblance of a chance in 2026.
And so, by the way, which we could describe as the, if this went poorly, the greatest unexpected Black Friday sale in college baseball history. Want to make a quick note here. Doing some reporting, Jacob is. And we want to note that if Tennessee players enter the portal, the NCAA would likely, would almost assuredly say that they have to sit out a year before they can play. Now, that is something that would obviously potentially be subject to a lawsuit, And while the lawsuit would take quite a while, there's also the possibility of an injunction that would then allow the players to play while the lawsuit was being adjudicated, as we've seen in multiple cases before. But it is worth noting that as we talk about the possibilities of players at the special transfer portal, that we do lay out the fact that that does not necessarily mean that those players would be able to play right away. So as you hear the rest of this, you know, on the podcast, when we were recording this, that was not clear to us. So do understand that we want to lay out that point. We want to give you as much information as we can. Obviously, this is happening quickly. And obviously, in a lot of cases, this hasn't even happened yet. But we did want to add that note.
For sure. There will be teams if guys – there will be teams before guys enter portals who reach out to players and go, hey, you know, we have an opportunity for you. This is a crap situation that you're in now. Why don't you come to a program with more stability and try and win games? That will happen. There's no doubt in my mind. For Tennessee to ward some of that off, it will need to promote from within, in my opinion. And I think that that starts with Josh Elander. He has been
– I would say this. If you were saying – any other, again, nothing against him, but any other hire would be surprising, I feel like, at this point.
100%. And Elander, to me, is it would be surprising within the internal promotion candidates if it wasn't him. He is the Tennessee recruiting coordinator. He is the backbone of this operation when it comes to the transfer portal, when it comes to their unbelievable 2026 high school recruiting class. Truly unbelievable. They have so much talent stacked up that we are talking about at the very top of our draft boards that you'll see as we update throughout the fall and into the spring. It's going to have a ton of Tennessee orange all over the top. Josh Elander has been a major factor in being able to put that together. And so at this stage, it's mid-October. You have to scramble to keep your roster together. You have to scramble to keep your recruiting class together. My first phone call would be to the person who, next to Tony, did the most to put it together. That's Josh Elander. I think he makes the most sense. He's been there since the beginning with Tony. He's the guy to me.
And it's not just player retention, all that, which, again, we're talking about, like, from a window standpoint, again, if you – the retention of this team, if this went sideways, if the team – if there were a lot of players who are not happy with the decision of your hire and all this, the window's kind of – nightmarish for Tennessee and great for players who really do want to change, because from the standpoint of, we are, from an academic purpose, we are nearing the end of a semester and you would have time. Now, how much, you know, money, how much NIL money, how much scholarship money, all that is available. There would be teams that would absolutely be looking at figuring out ways to move things around and all. And if you're saying, oh, we're going to be looking on to see what shortstops in the portal or what pitchers in the portal for January or whatever, you never would imagine the quality. So I'm saying, like, from that standpoint, like, it's not the same as if you had, if we were, again, like, if we were in August and this happened, yes, that's a good window or whatever, but, like, it's, this is one where you kind of, the season's not that far away. Fall ball's going on right now. But on top of that, it is an opportunity. Like, everyone doing this, these are competitors. These are coaches. Obviously, we do have the example, like, this can go sideways. We saw this go sideways literally a year ago because we had Texas A&M that was coming off of a national champion, you know, title series appearance. And they did the very logical thing to do, which is, hey, if we're going to hold on, we've got one of the most talented teams, our preseason number one. You know, this was the considered the most talented team in college baseball heading into the next year. And it fell apart. So it can go sideways. But I would say, if you're Tennessee, you take that risk. But on top of it, okay, you could always write this off as, this was never going to be easy. We lost the best, you know, our best coach in program history in late October, you know, before the season, during fall ball. Like, how, yes, okay, it didn't work out. Well, we now can have a, you know, a nationwide search or whatever. If it works, then you can say, great, the program rolls on. We've shown that as great as our coach was, this was a program, not a coach. And at that point, you look at the resources that Tennessee has, you look at the talent that they can, you know, that they have, again, like lined up right now coming in. You could say, like, this could be, there are very few programs I would say that are more positioned that this could be a speed bump rather than a, you know, like a derailment that takes years to recover from.
I think that's true. You know, it's hard to break down what the future of Tennessee looks like right now. It really is. And you know, in our world, and JJ, you know this as well as I do, like, we, it's always our job to try and have the answers when stuff like this is happening and try and forecast what could possibly be. But I would be doing a disservice, in my opinion, to sit right here at this exact moment and say the future of Tennessee is bright, or the future of Tennessee is really murky and it's not going to look good because you're losing Tony Vitello. In the transfer portal era, it is so hard to predict what is going to come from this. Could we see some of Tennessee's top players leave in the immediate aftermath? Of course we can, because there are other programs out there that have the money to be able to pay them, that have the starting jobs to be able to say, hey, do you want to come be our starting third baseman or shortstop, or have a spot in our rotation? Well, we can offer you one right now, and we have the money to be able to back it up. That can happen. And if you're in the middle of a coaching change, even if you're promoting a familiar face for some of these players, who's to say that the opportunity is not better on the other side, at least in the eyes of the beholder, which is the players and their family? That could be a really hard pitch to beat. At the same time, on the other side of the coin, I think we would be remiss to not acknowledge the possibility that the exact opposite is true. Who's to say that a Tennessee player doesn't hear from another program and then hear from Josh Elander, for example, who says, why leave? We have a great team. It's the same team that Tony put together. You didn't necessarily commit to Tennessee for Tony. You committed to play at Tennessee, to play for this team and this coaching staff as a whole with these teammates. Let's go win a national championship without him. Let's show people that we can do it. So, you know, there's a lot that exists between those two lines too. To me, those are the extremes, and there are 100 possibilities in between. So listen, with the amount of talent that they have stacked up, and the recruiting classes that they have built, I don't think that they get decimated by this. 100% loss as a result of this kind of a change is just not going to happen. I think that Tennessee ends up in a position that is not nearly as good as what they were prior when they had Tony Vitello, providing he does leave. I also don't think that it's, you know, reverting back to the Tennessee of old, where winning was few and far between and they didn't really have any national relevance. I don't think that they slip below the line that Tony has established for them. I just don't know that they're immediate title contenders. But, and I just want to reiterate this, I can see a myriad, you know, amount of opportunities and possibilities for what this team could end up being.
As you just said, the amount of unknowns we're talking about here, we are, again, we're trying to lay out all of this, but at the same time, let's just acknowledge, to kind of lay out what you said, we are acknowledging that we know that while it's headed in this direction, it is not a finalized deal. So there is, you have to put that there's percentages here on Tony Vitello becomes San Francisco Giants, you know, manager. So that's door number one here.
Let me interrupt you just to say, because I think this is really important. If you're asking me right now at 4:30 Eastern time on October 18th, is Tony Vitello the next manager of the Giants? My answer is yes. I don't even have to wait to think about it. I absolutely believe that he will be the next coach. So I do think it's important to say that even as we discuss the scope of possibilities here, it is our operating belief and my understanding based on my conversations with sources that that is what's going to happen. So to your point, JJ, yes, it could completely fall through. He could be in Tennessee's dugout in 2026. I would be, at this stage, very surprised by that outcome. Go ahead, though. Sorry about that.
So that's number one. We think it's going to happen, but that is not a 100% and zero right there.
Right.
And then we have, we don't know, we expect that Josh Elander would be the next head coach for Tennessee, whether on an interim basis for the year or just named as the new head coach. But that's branching out percentages number two, right? Then we have from that, as you said, whatever hire they make, as you said, this is a coaching change. This is a special portal opens. And that could mean that players who realize that they're going to be buried in fall ball, you know, are going to hop in the portal because it's like, oh, I thought I was going to play every day. And now I've realized that there are two or three players at my position who may be more experienced and better than me right now or whatever, right? So it could be that there's this minor siphoning off that's coming from kind of the edges of the roster. Or as you said, it could be that the roster has much more change than we expect, right? Which, and let's just acknowledge, if that did happen, the flip side of this, the challenges of filling holes, when we say the timing of this right now, when we say that the timing is really poor for Tennessee, I would say the key thing of that is not because they have a logical succession plan here. This is not something where, you know, they don't have those plans, but if it did lead to even somewhat minor, you know, like, but two or three projected starters on this team decided to leave, that is a problem that is, I would say, for a program like Tennessee, relatively easy to solve in July and August. Is that fair? Like, not that, yes. But they're Tennessee. They can go out and say, like, you saw this player in the Cape or this mid-major, whatever, we can offer them a better, you know, better package, all these things. If you said we lost this player in mid to late November and we're having to fill a fill-in-the-blank position or a couple, I'm not saying there's nothing out there to get in by January, especially on the JUCO route, things like that.
Yep.
But you're probably going to be taking a pretty big hit, are you not? Like, it would be much more like that. The challenge of if you had even semi-significant departures, filling those for the 2026 season would be very challenging, would it not?
100%. I mean, there is disaster potential here, and I'm not trying to dodge that. I do think, again, that we end up seeing something that's more in the middle of the road to the positive end of the spectrum here, especially because we do expect Tennessee to promote from within. There is some sort of sell and maybe even some buy-in. You can rally the troops behind this situation. You know, hey, let's go and prove ourselves even after this unique, you know, damaging potentially phenomenon has unfolded. But yeah, there is disaster potential. I mean, if you see a mass exodus from your roster as a byproduct of this coaching change, which you weren't anticipating, and is happening far months later than is supposed to be normal, it's going to be hard. I mean, they will have to do some combination of relying upon the very young and unseasoned and unready talent that they have in the house to go and fill in important roles, or going to the JUCO route and seeing who they can pluck out of JUCO at the very last second in between semesters. Now, very important here, this is not like professional free agency. Just because you're still on the market does not make you eligible to sign. If you don't have the grades, if you haven't met the requirements to be able to enroll at Tennessee halfway through the year, that is another barrier. This is not as simple as Coach A calls Player A and says, hey, Player A, you know, you've done really well at JUCO. We need a lot of help and have an opportunity for you to pitch a lot of innings at Tennessee right now. Does Player A's grades match with what's required to get into Tennessee? Does he have enough credit hours to be able to enroll mid-year? It's not the same as enrolling over the summer. Credits don't transfer as easily. There are a lot of questions that will have to be answered and a lot of legwork that will have to be done in order to be able to fill out this roster if that's what it comes down to. Again, if I had to predict, I don't think Tennessee will be in that position. But is that within the realm of possibility if Tony Vitello leaves? 100%. It should be on every Tennessee fan's radar.
And that's what I'm saying. So we are talking about branching trees where we have percentages on each of these. So yes, this is unknowable right now because we could be talking about one scenario where it's like it goes one way or another where it goes very different. And those things are unknowable. But okay, before we wrap this up, Jacob, What else have we not covered? What else is there that you look at and say, the other aspect that we need to be looking at here is this?
You know, I think the biggest thing for me is the implications around the SEC. I look at a conference that has a really great amount of talent at the top. And there are a couple different teams that I think could very reasonably win the year. Tennessee was one of them. I thought Tennessee this season had Omaha potential. I thought it had SEC champion potential. And that's not to say that that still won't be the case if Tony Vitello ends up in San Francisco. But as we've discussed for the last 50 minutes, it does change the outlook on the season, or it at least clouds it. We don't know what Tennessee is going to look like as a byproduct of all of this. And so I think that this opens the door for LSU to have another very prominent season and maybe have a little bit less resistance as it tries to defend its title and win a third within 4 years. I'd look at a team like Florida, Georgia, and Auburn, guys that were maybe towards the middle of the pack that have one less team potentially that they're going to need to be able to compete with. So if I'm another SEC school, I'm watching very closely to see who Tennessee puts in charge, how that impacts who they retain and who they have to recruit potentially over the course of the next couple months, and how that might shake up the projected standings in a loaded conference, because this is a juggernaut within that league that just took a monumental hit, regardless of how well they recover from it.
Okay. Along those lines, let me ask you one other question with that, which is, we are obviously, you are gathering information on fall ball all the time, but we do have a sense of what these rosters are. We're looking, you know, we're already starting our thought process of previewing the season. We had our way too early college top 25, but before all this happened, what would you describe for, again, for the fans here who are listening, who are still here at minute 50, but are more kind of the general baseball fan who may not be, you know, as plugged in on as far as the 2026 college baseball forecast, how did you kind of foresee where Tennessee fit as far as a national championship contender and an SEC championship contender for 2026?
You know, we believe that Tennessee was going to be right up there in the mix. This is a roster that was put together largely via the transfer portal, and that's a two-year process. So they had guys who are returning to the team, who are going to be very impactful, who they already had and recruited via the transfer portal. And then they did a great job bringing in new guys. Henry Ford, who we've talked a lot about from Virginia, who wasn't even expected to get to campus, is on campus. Now imagine, let me just distract myself here for a second. Imagine if you're Henry Ford and you transferred to Tennessee and the entire conversation in the lead up to the draft was, there's no way this guy's going to get to campus because he's ready to go pro. He's got an early top three rounds profile. He's gone. And you go, you know what? Forget it. The NIL is right. The coaching staff is right. I'm going to Tennessee. I'm going to end up in Knoxville. You shock the baseball world. And now, 4 months later, you're sitting in your Knoxville apartment and you're wondering, I just committed to a head coach who's going to play pro ball when I had the opportunity to do the same. And now I'm here in college and I got to play another season. So that's super interesting. The dynamic of all of that is something that we're going to have to follow. But what got me to this point is that they do have a lot of talent. They did a great job in the transfer portal. We anticipated that they would be roughly a top 10 to 15 team, if not higher, in the preseason poll. I still kind of expect that, even if they do lose some talent after all of this is said and done. I think that Tennessee is going to be a really good team. So if you're trying to get into the swing of college baseball, this is a very, very talented roster that could, in theory, get picked apart after Tony Vitello's departure. But in the event that it doesn't, they are national title contenders. They are a team that can get to Omaha, and that's with or without Tony Vitello in the dugout.
It'll be fascinating to see how this all, like we said, we just laid out that this is a decision that has to be made still. Nothing final yet. But if it does happen, as we expect, there are then numerous downstream effects as well. We hope we've laid out today kind of to give you a kind of a roadmap for what to look for over the next month, I guess we would say. Before we wrap up though, okay, so as you said, just to summarize, as you understand it right now, you would be, is it fair to say you would be surprised if we are not talking about it has been made official? Like that at this point, not that it is 100% a certainty or anything like that, but it seems likely that Tony Vitello is going to be the manager of the San Francisco Giants.
I would say that it's increasingly likely. I do believe at this point that Tony Vitello will be the next manager of the San Francisco Giants. I want to stress, and this is in our reporting and writing over at baseballamerica.com, which, by the way, there will be a lot more content relating to this situation going up over there over the course of the next 24 to 48 hours. So be sure to check in over there every once in a while. But we did say that it is not done. There are negotiations still ongoing. The two sides have not come to a finalized agreement yet. But if you're going to read the tea leaves here and follow the trends, I would say that Tony Vitello is most likely to be the next San Francisco Giants manager.
And let's also just say with this, like the layout, like also you have over there, like that, you know, this is something where there is no way that the Giants are this far down and not have an understanding of that, what Tony Vitello makes at Tennessee, what the buyout provisions are, all these things are all very much understood. It's not something where they're getting to this point and then it goes, wait, but you want X number of dollars? Oh, no. We're nowhere near that. Like, you right. know, in a way that you really don't as much with anyone with a normal candidate. Because, I mean, again, Tony Vitello's salary is basically a public record, something that's not true of major league managers. And again, so this is not something where there are hurdles often that would normally be still in play that are maybe a little less in play here, because again, you go into this eyes open with an awareness of what this means. It's going to be fascinating to see. As you can tell, we're fascinated. We just did a 55 minute almost emergency podcast about this, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be, if you care about baseball like we do at all levels, I don't know how this isn't exciting. I can see if you're a Tennessee fan. I get it completely, Tennessee fans. If you're a Vol and you're like, I don't think this is exciting at all. I hate this. Okay, that's understandable. But for fans of college baseball who are also just fans of baseball, for fans of baseball who are also a little bit fans of college baseball, whatever it is, this is exciting because a door looks like it is being opened that has never been opened before. And as you laid out, if it does open, that could change a lot of things going forward.
No doubt. I mean, this is to me a landmark case. We talked about this within this hour episode. What does this do for the future of coaching hires at the MLB level? Do we see more teams look to colleges and go, hey, Jay Johnson, you've done it. You've won multiple national championships. You know what you can do at the college level, and you know that if you need to go back, you'd be the first phone call for almost any team in the country, if not every team in the country. Come give us a shot. Let's see if we can win some games and you can help develop some of these young guys that we're calling up quicker than ever and win at the major league level. Tony Vitello is the test case. And so if you are a baseball fan, are we about to see a new trend emerge as teams try and develop an edge over their competition? It's harder than ever to win in baseball just with how good each team is and how good these players are that are getting pumped out constantly. You need to find a new edge. Is Tony Vitello and hires along these lines, is this the new professional edge? I think it could be, but that's going to be the fun part. We got to wait and see.
We'll have a lot more over at baseballamerica.com. We hope you enjoy this. If you did, please like and subscribe. You know, if you have questions, you have comments about this, we'd love to hear them. If you do it on YouTube, again, I try to stay on YouTube pretty regularly and respond to those as I can. For Jacob, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.